Hey, everybody, what's going on? We got a couple guests here today to talk about the NL East. And, you know, it's going to be a pretty good podcast, I feel like, because these guys are pretty knowledgeable, especially on Twitter. If either of you follow them, I can let them introduce themselves here in a second. And I'm with Henny, as always. How's it going, Henny?
Not too bad, Logan. Obviously, good to be back. Hope everyone had a great Christmas, great New Year's. And thank God 2020 is over.
Amen on that. We can let our first guest go here. Max, you can go ahead and introduce yourself and talk about some of your stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My name is Max Greenfield. I was a former Washington National minor league video and technology intern. I could return back to the Nationals in 2021. You can follow me at GreenfieldMax18 on Twitter. I also am a writer for Pitcher List. I write about mainly player analysis and sort of telling you which players to keep an eye on for the 2020 season.
Awesome. And then we have another guest on here too. Jason, you can go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
My name is Jason Gold. I am, unlike Max, I'm not a former team employee, as much as that would be awesome to have on the resume. I started my own site, actually. You can follow it on Twitter at Six Man Rotation. You can follow me on Twitter at Chop City Jason. I mostly write about the Braves, other NLE stuff. But if I find a player that's I'm particularly interested in, I'll do a deep dive on them. I spend most of my day just, you know, perusing stats and trying to find interesting stuff to write about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting, especially because both of you have such a good knowledge of the NL East. Something that we don't have as good of a knowledge of, but I mean, we still have pretty decent knowledge of, because I mean, both of us are NL Central fans,
yeah,
diehard. So I'm Cardinals and Cubs over here. So it'll be a little interesting.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm
very,
so sorry.
It's very unstable.
Yeah, it's not the best time for either of you. I'm sorry.
Especially because we're roommates.
You did get some good news with Boog today, though.
We live together, too. It's not a great living situation all the time.
Oh, no.
So it's even worse, Jack. We get pretty heated, especially during Cardinals-Cubs games. It's pretty bad there for a little bit.
Yeah.
At least you guys get a bunch of guaranteed primetime games every year.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, not many teams have that. So, I mean, we're pretty lucky, especially to be pretty close to the stadium, too. We would have gone to some games and had a lot of arguments, but COVID kind of ruined that. Probably got thrown out of a Cardinal game or two, but always next year.
I don't think we're going to get thrown out of any games. We're not that wild. Jeez.
I've almost seen it happen before, but that's for another story. We can go ahead and start talking about, like, this NL East. Like, I think it was honestly pretty impressive what happened last year. Kind of a tight race, and also to see the Nationals be in last place is, I mean, kind of fitting after the last year they had. I mean, World Series champions, and then they in last place. But that's pretty much the position they were in.
It was a big hangover.
But wasn't the position they were in the year before whenever they actually won the World Series? So, I mean, we could play double advocate all day and say, you know, what if there's a full season? And I mean, they probably know a little bit more than us about that one, but. I mean, what do you guys think about that? Like, the Nationals finishing in last place. I mean, do you think they play a full season? They maybe iron some stuff out there, or is that just the way it is?
I'll take this first, Jason, then you can chime in if you disagree on anything. But, I mean, over a full season, maybe they play up to 500, but they, you know, Strasburg had that hand injury, and, it, you know, in a shortened season, they were pretty much just not going to even try. In a full season, they probably just give him like a month off and then let him come back. But even in a full season, you know, Patrick Corbin looked considerably worse on the mound. You know, just he didn't have as much break on his slider. His fastball was completely, you know, ineffective. You know, so he's going to have to like figure out some stuff in the offseason. You know, a big part of it is he had thrown more pitches and more innings than he ever did, you know, in his entire career the year prior. So that hurts. And then, you know, he gets all that time off and, you know, probably just up and down, starting not and stopping consistently probably hurt him a little bit. And then offensively, I mean, the Nationals, you know, Trey Turner and Juan Soto, and then just a lot of nothing. You know, some really disappointing performances from some key veterans and some guys who just couldn't stay healthy. So is the roster's currently constructed, are they like a last place team? No. But they have a big payroll and are sort of like middle of the pack. That's kind of where they're at. So, you know, I think they, you know, trading for Josh Bell, you know, if you really hope that he can turn into that 2019 version of himself where he was really, really good for the first like three quarters of the season. And then, you know, kind of hope that you can get that out of him. Then like that solves some of the problems, but you know, they're basically an average team and they're going to have to improve the bullpen and hope that Patrick Corbin can rebound, hope Strasburg can stay healthy and going to need to sign some big bats. So I wasn't too like when it going into the year, obviously, like I was kind of hoping like they'd play better than they did, obviously, but you know, it didn't surprise me. I remember at the trade deadline, there were rumors that they might buy and I'm glad that they didn't because I think that would have been the wrong direction for the team. So they stood pat, which is better than buying. You know, it's definitely going to be interesting to see if they make any more moves. But as it stands now, I think they're basically an average team.
I mean, yeah, I think you summed that up pretty good. I think they had a lot of disappointment. I think, you know, there was some players who really stood out. I think Trey Turner, for me, really stood out. He kind of quietly had himself a really good season. I feel like Washington doesn't get a lot of notoriety for what they do. I mean, I feel like Juan Soto should be getting a lot more notoriety than he is. And I mean, Bryce Harper got the notoriety, but he brought it to himself. He's kind of like the Trevor Bauer of hitters in a way. And not so much anymore, though. After he got that contract, he's been a little bit more quiet. Yeah. I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't really help when you're in Philadelphia. You call the Marlins the bottom feeders, and then you just have a horrible season. That doesn't help either.
Philly's got some issues.
Or when you say, or when you say you're going to bring a title back to DC 2 years ago.
He did.
What a horribly hilarious misstep.
I don't know. I mean,
it did age well, though.
It did. It aged really well.
Just not at all in the way he intended.
No, not at all.
I feel like he signed some type of agreement there or something to say, if you leave the Nationals and they win a World Series, you'll get to win one maybe in 5 years, maybe. Sign a deal with the devil. I don't know. There's some conspiracy there. That's too specific. Exactly the year he left. And
it was wild.
It was wild. It was super wild. And I mean, kind of going off that too, I mean, the Braves, I feel like, are the best team in that division, at least for me. And
it's not even a question.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Marlins do something else again, but we can talk about that in a minute. But I mean, we have a Braves fan on here, so we can let him talk a little bit about the Braves. I mean, I'm pretty high on them, and I think they're a legit World Series contender, especially for next year. Maybe a notch down after all the Padres moves, but we can also talk about all that stuff. So, Jason, what do you think about the Braves coming up this next year?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about the Braves forever, but let me just add one thing about the Nationals real quick. I think one of their big issues last season is, first of all, I think it was the wrong decision to let Rendon go. I think they should have kept him over Strasburg. They let him go with the expectation that Carter Kieboom and Victor Robles would kind of fill his shoes together offensively, and neither of them really managed to get anything going at the plate. I don't really expect anything much out of either of them, too much more than what they showed in 2020. I don't know if you agree with that, Max, but I've never been too high on Robles at all as a hitter. I think he's fantastic defensively, but I really think he might be among the worst hitters in the NL East, to be honest.
I would agree with your assessment on Robles. Kieboom, you know, it's too early to say, you know, such a small sample size, but yeah, I mean, they were both, and Robles was noticeably worse on defense too, which really, really didn't help. That outfield defensively was, what's the word I'm looking for? Bad. That's the one. Yeah, they were bad. But yes, yeah, I agree.
I could go on forever about how much of a defensive outlier I feel like the Nationals outfield was in 2019. But let me talk about the Braves while I have an open platform, because usually my friends and the people over at Spam Rotation, they get tired of hearing me talk about the Braves. So I'll take any opportunity I can get. You know, I definitely agree that they're the favorite in the East. I don't think any other team is really that close to them, especially after they went out and added Charlie Morton, who I think is still a really good pitcher. He's not, you know, what he was 2-3 years ago, but he's really the missing piece there, so that, you know, every fourth day around, it doesn't have to be Kyle Wright or Bryce Wilson going out there on the mound as you know, as great as they ended up being in the postseason, I don't think that's who they are long term. Freddie Freeman's still in his prime. I think, you know, MVP season is not an outlier for him. He's been trying to do that for years now. He's been top five MVP, I think, four times in the last six or seven seasons. You know, Acuna and Albies are among the best hitters in the National League. Ozzy, particularly, I think, is really underrated as a hitter, but he's the best defensive second baseman in baseball. You know, they're lacking a little offensive depth now. They let Marcell Ozuna go. I really don't expect them to bring him back just because of, you know, financial circumstances. They let Adam Duvall go, who had a great season for them this year. So, you know, I'm not really sure who's going to be that big bat in the lineup behind Freddie at this point. But Dansby really stepped up last season. Arcakis is washed. I don't expect him back with the team. So you basically have, you know, the three elite guys at the front of the order. Then you have Dansby, who's good, but he's not going to be, you know, 2020 Marcell Ozuna or anything like that. So, you know, there's definitely an opening there for the Mets or the Marlins or even the Nationals, if they have a resurgent season, to come back and challenge them. But there's still time for them to add that bat. And I feel like if they add a big bat to slot into that lineup, there's going to be a significant gap from them to the second place team in the East next season.
I agree with everything he said. Like, yeah, going off that real quick, just wanted to say, it reminds me, they sort of remind me right now, the front of the lineup, the 2019 Braves, of just, they had that Acuna, Donaldson, Freeman at the top, which was just so dominant. And, you know, Travis d'Arnaud, you know, if you buy into his offensive resurgence that he's sort of shown in the last season and a half per se, then like that's another good bat. But I'm Jason and I have talked a lot about how the team also needs some pitching, more reassurance on the pitching than anything. Like, there's clearly talent in their rotation, right, with Fried, Soroka, Ian Anderson, and, you know, Charlie Morton. Like, that's a really good, like, if you roll into the playoffs as that as your four, like, that's really good. And like, that's still what separates me on the Braves front from other teams in their division, is that like their playoff four, as I like to say, is still really, really good. It's just sort of, they need something else behind that, whether it's, you know, Tukey steps up in some regard, or, you know, another guy steps up. And then also, like, I hope Christian Pache is everything that we've hyped him up to be. I mean, he's just, if he can find a way to be like a 110 to 120 weighted run created plus hitter, then he's going to be a phenomenal player in baseball.
A starting role in the postseason. I kind of thought there was going to be a black hole in the lineup after Duvall got hurt in that first postseason game. But Pache really stepped up. He looked very competent against the Dodgers pitching, which surprised me. He didn't get a whole lot of hits. He didn't really flash a lot of power, but he took some really good pitches. He showed some really good plate discipline. And I feel like if he is going to develop into that above average hitter, that's going to be the key for him. I don't really see him as being the kind of guy who ever gets to that plus power. He has the frame for it, but I don't know if he has the swing mechanics for it. The plate discipline is definitely there. He can be a gap to gap, you know, high doubles kind of guy. You add that on with, you know, perennial gold glove defense, he could be one of the best players in the division easily if he hits that offensive ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. The plate discipline was just so much better than I expected.
Yeah, that was the guy I was going to mention, kind of why it's okay with Duvall leaving, is he's kind of a guy that might be able to take that place and kind of see what he's got. I mean, he's 21 years old. He's going to get better with age, more than likely, realistically, typically get better. He should. Especially like you mentioned, he's patient already. He's 21 years old, and he's not swinging out of his shoes like Javier Baez was, or half the guys that are young swinging out of his shoes. But
speaking of guys who swing out of their shoes, I still have faith in Austin Riley also. He took some he had some big plate discipline gains in 2020. I know it was a short season, small sample size, but he wasn't even supposed to be the starting third baseman coming into the season. Oh. And he grabbed a hold of that role and he didn't let go of it. I mean, he dropped his whiff rate by almost 30% from 2019 to 2020. He took more walks. He just saw more pitches in general, which has been, a big part of the success of the Braves lineup in general, is they take a lot of pitches. They become less aggressive. And I think Riley's really bought into that. And he's still young. He's only 23 years old. You know, he's still got a lot of development left.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that. The thing I think that could set the Braves apart, if they get that little bit of pitching, I think that will really set them apart. That's something that they don't have that other teams have. Like, the Mets have just kind of wasted that over the years. I mean, DeGrom, they also have Syndergaard. So, I mean, like, those two right there should be more than enough in any situation.
The guy went to Philly.
Zach Wheeler. He was awesome last year too. Awesome with Aaron Nolan. We talked about that a little bit too, but
yeah, I fully expect Zach Wheeler to be back in New York by the end of next season. I think he's going to get traded back to the Mets.
I don't even know what's going on with Philly. Like, I genuinely don't get it.
Philly doesn't know what's going on in Philly.
Philly hasn't known what's going on in Philly since like 2009. Honestly, yes. They've just been a train wreck since then.
When they had Ryan Howard. Ryan Howard. Oh. That man was like every kid's dream. He's hit so many bombs every year.
Listen, they have probably the most underrated pitcher in baseball, though, in Aaron Nola. I honestly think that he's top five among pitchers in the league. He's just so good. And,
I wouldn't go that far, but he's definitely – when I think of top 10 pitchers, I'm always like, man, I keep forgetting Nola. He had that weird, just a weird 2019. It was just something throughout the year just wasn't clicking consistently. But in 2018, he was great. In 2020, he was great again. But Girardi would just wear him down because he's like, it's a short season. There's not a single guy behind you that wants to finish your game for you, apparently. So I'm just going to ride you for as long as possible. And like, I feel bad for both of them because clearly like Nola's numbers look worse just because he stayed out so much longer than he should have because Girardi had no other choice. And I feel bad for Nola in that regard, but he's so good. Justin Choi, who's, I can't remember his username on Twitter. I'll have to look, but he wrote an article about Aaron Nola and it was really, really good. So I'll let Jason talk and then I'll look up Justin's username.
Yeah. I mean, the Phillies and Nola specifically are kind of going through that meme that everyone always passes around about the Mets, about how DeGrom will pitch lights out for 8 innings and then his bullpen will blow it inevitably. Mm-hmm. Nola in 2020 went through that, but like 3 times worse. I think the 2020 Phillies bullpen was among the worst in Major League history. I think they pulled it out right at the end of the season, so they weren't the worst, but just even to be in that discussion is insane. And they went out at the deadline and made 2 trades to get arms to make the bullpen better.
Which were objectively like good trades. Like at the time, I was like, yeah, these are good moves. And then they just stunk. All 3 guys
that they got just fell apart.
They stunk. Really, they were so bad.
Workman's first game as a Philly was against the Braves, and he blew the save in the 9th inning to lose that game.
He gave up like, I think he pitched like 3 or 4 innings for the Phillies, and he gave up like 9 runs. It was atrocious. He was so bad, and Hembree was terrible too. Who was the other guy? David Hale, I think, was the third guy they acquired, and he ended up being the best of the three, and he still had like a 4 ERA and 4 peripherals, so he wasn't very good either.
And the worst part is they gave up some quality arms to get those guys, and it just did not at all work out for them.
What's for Hale, they gave up this AA reliever who had like these great strikeout numbers and good, like he had a good ERA and good peripherals in the minors, and they could have just called him up for nothing, but instead they traded him to the Yankees for David Hale, where Hale wasn't very good, and then the guy didn't even pitch for the Yankees. It made no sense.
Yeah, like you were saying, the team ERA was a 5.14 overall last year.
That's horrible. That's horrible. So bad.
But the top 3 starters pitched whatever, like 71 innings, and 59 innings. That's a ton of innings in general, and they're all sub 4, and one of them's even sub 3, and you're still above a 5.
Exactly.
That's embarrassing. Exactly. You have to get that's 3 outs.
So bad. It's what's more impressive about the Phillies is like, you know, when they signed Harper, they're like, we're going to spend, we're going to go for it, we're going to try and win and everything. And I was like, great. Like I'm happy an owner in baseball is willing to say that we want to win.
Spent on the wrong players.
Yeah.
They gave Robertson what, like $20 million.
Yeah. They gave him
and he never pitched an inning for them.
Yep. But like now the one of the best relievers in baseball is in on the market, right? Liam Hendricks is out there available, and that the Phillies are a team that just desperately needs Liam Hendricks like so bad. but they won't, you know, for better or for worse, they won't spend money at all. And so Hendricks is going to walk to somebody like the Blue Jays or something, and their bullpen's still going to be terrible.
I mean, even if they don't want to spend on Hendricks, Brad Hand is still out there.
Yeah. Brad Hand
wouldn't keep for
$10 million for Brad Hand is nothing. Like, I know relievers don't get paid much, and paying relievers can be seen as faulty, but Brad Hand, $10 million, are you kidding me? You could do that. You could give Brad Hand a 2-year, $18 million contract with $8 million this year, $10 million next year, whatever, like however you want to do it, and he'd take it. He would take it, but no, the Phillies won't do that, and I don't know why. Granted, no team's
doing
that.
And that's not even mentioning all of the, you know, average and better relievers that the Dodgers just picked up for nothing. Like
Brandon Workman, how had a 188 in Boston in 2019.
Yeah.
And then just fell apart. And they're like, oh, you know, we should trade for a guy that's got a 4.05 ERA with 7 games into the season.
I mean, it sounds like a good idea in theory. He has been a good reliever, but they need to do something else. Like us being pitchers in general, like, cause we played at a college level. So we've had a lot of experience with this, that if your starter comes into the game, usually your starter is going to be really good. You're going to have 4 or 5 pitchers come into the game at any point who are starters, and you pretty much trust them to allow like 3 runs over 6 innings. Like that's going to happen. That's normal. The real weakness is the bullpen. Like you don't honestly know what you're getting. It feels like you're playing Russian roulette half the time. And I feel like that was even worse with the Phillies because, like, you know, you have guys in there and one day they could be absolutely lights out and shut down the opposing team. And then the next day you could have a guy not even be able to get an out and they hit like 4 home runs off of him. And you're like, this is just, I don't understand how you could be so Jekyll and Hyde, but that's just how it happens. And to have a weak bullpen, especially the owner who says he's willing to spend so much. I mean, I feel like you should just give in and just send it. And then whatever you need, sign somebody, sign a pitching coach, bullpen coach, sign up somebody who can figure something out for you and help your guys get better. Because obviously what you're doing now isn't working.
The interesting one that I saw with Workman, at least, is in 2019, it's really been Jekyll Hyde. He's given up 5 home runs in a year and they'll give up 11, 7, 6, and gets all the way down to 1 in 2019. And that was in, he gave up 1 home run in, what was that, 73 outings in 2019, which is incredible.
That's pretty impressive.
And then last year, 14 outings, 4 home runs. Like it's been very up and down. He either has like, it's really weak contact with him or really heavy contact where he's just getting smoked all year. And you kind of want, like, there's no balance with him, you feel like, and that's not really necessarily a guy you want to trade for. Yeah, he had one really good bullpen season, but he's a bullpen guy, and that is what happens in bullpens, because it's a lot more stressful innings.
Yeah, fastball heavy pitchers, and they allow a lot of fly balls.
It's curveballs, dirty.
And yeah, true. And with like those fly balls, occasionally they're going to get out. You're going to have a year where, you know, 50% of the fly balls you allow are home runs or something, and the next year it's going to be 10%. It's like a completely stat you just can't predict because it's just
it's extremely fluky, home run to fly ball percentage. It's which is sort of like the whole point of the stat XFIP is like we're sort of like addressing that, but I don't know if it's like the best thing in the world to reward pitchers who like give up too many home runs. Like that's a weird way to operate the stat. But yeah, I mean, you guys are right. Like if you know, if a guy clearly shows something like, oh, he's given up, you know, let's say home run to fly ball ratio, Workman's is like, let's say it's consistently around league average. And then in 2019, it's like dramatically below, right? He gives up 1 home run. To me, if anything, that more sense shows the sign of that points to regression more than like, oh, he figured something out. That just shows like, oh, something fluky happened, right? Like that, but the Phillies didn't see it that way. And like, obviously they're living with that.
Yeah.
I mean, to be totally fair to the Phillies, you know, the division, the NL East has been somewhat overly kind to teams acquiring, you know, fly ball pitchers who severely outperform their peripherals. I mean, the Nationals did it with Sean Doolittle, who is a notoriously heavy fly ball pitcher who came in, had, you know, 2 elite seasons, or really 1.5 elite seasons for them, and then fell off a cliff.
Yeah, his velocity just...
Yeah, the Braves did it with Shane Green and Mark Melanson, who somehow managed to build an elite bullpen around those two when they've made a career out of outperforming, you know, their peripherals.
Shane Green... sub two ERA, above four peripherals, never gonna make sense.
Yeah. Even the Mets did it, but kind of in reverse. They went out and got Edwin Diaz, who I still think is the best reliever in baseball. But he got bit hard by, you know, the home run fly ball regression bug in 2020 and to some extent in 2019. You know, he's another guy who an NL East team went out and got. He's a notoriously heavy, you know, fly ball pitcher, but he strikes out guys, you know, like no one else in the business does right now. I mean, his stuff is insane. And I can see how the Phillies looked around and were like, yeah, let's do this too. This will work out for us also. I mean, why wouldn't it?
Sad. Right? Sad.
But instead, you know, they went after Brendan Workman. So
I think that's the difference, right? Is like the Mets went after Edwin Diaz, clearly coming off a great season, who showed sustainable signs of success because he strikes out a lot of guys. And yeah, he gives up fly balls, but he gets a lot of strikeouts. Workman wasn't like an elite strikeout pitcher. He got a lot, but he wasn't like an elite one. And also, you know, again, any guy that gives up one home run in 74 outings, well, that's really impressive. It's not, you can't look at that and go, yeah, he'll do it again, right? Like, no, there's no way you can look at that and say it's sustainable, which was probably the problem, was that they were just looking at it from the wrong way. But, you know, I respect the Phillies that they saw their problem and said at least trying to fix it. They probably just went after, you know, like Archie Bradley was available. That's a guy that they definitely should have traded for.
100%. The only thing I'm going to give them for that trade is they didn't give up a lot to get him, because they traded a minor leaguer who
didn't they trade? What was it?
They gave up Nick Pivetta to get him, and I still think Nick Pivetta has plenty of potential.
Yeah,
I mean, he looked really good for the Sox really at the end of the year.
He starts for Boston, he looked great. You're right, but in Philadelphia, he was not.
No, yeah, and
small sample size,
but he just
kind also of, it just could have been a fit thing. Like he just wasn't working out in Philly because their mindset on how to approach his game just wasn't working. And he just needed to go to Boston where they approached it, which somehow it worked. It could have been that, you know. Yeah. I don't think the Phillies are some pitching savants like the Dodgers and the Rays are, right? Like, I don't think they have that reputation.
And I think you see that nowadays, too, with a lot of teams who are going to the World Series are teams who I think believe in analytics, one, and also develop their players, too. So they're not just relying on the blind analytics and saying, oh, this guy gets on base, so obviously he's a good player. Well, he says, well, he gets on base, maybe we could teach him just to hit a little bit better, do something a little bit more, and he could be even a better player, maybe sustain this or whatever he needs to do. And I think we saw that with Astros on the pitching side. Hitting side, we don't have to touch on, but I think the pitching
You see Trevor Bauer's point about the Astros pitching side, though?
What's that?
They were using
RPMs by using like stuff. And he did it in a game once. He did it for an inning. He went out there.
Oh, no, he did it the entire 2020 season.
But he did it a couple times. Like, it wouldn't be like the whole game he's doing. It'd be like one inning, like the third inning, he'd be throwing like 95, 96. The rest of him would be sitting like 90, 92, 93. And then he'd be like,
you think in 2020, before going, you know, his RPM per fastball in his career was around 2,500 entering 2020. In 2020, 2,800. And now listen, it's possible to increase your spin. Like there are ways to do it. But the only notable way to increase it by 300 RPM to people's knowledge was using pine tar. And the only reason we know that is because he said that himself.
Yep.
That's the only way to increase it. So when his RPM jumped in his like after about like four or five starts into the season, a lot of people were saying, hey, this is kind of weird. I mean, this isn't related to the NL East, but Trevor Bauer definitely used pine tar.
I hate defending Trevor Bauer in any season. But like, I've made this argument on Twitter before, and I feel like anytime I have a chance to reiterate it, I have to. Like, he came out, right, and called out Gerrit Cole for using pine tar, when it was pretty obvious that Cole was using pine tar to get the results he was. He came out and publicized that. The league did nothing about it. And then he watched Cole go get a $250 million contract from the Yankees off the back of that performance.
324.
I love that we would all like to say we would be virtuous enough to not do the same thing in Bauer's situation to then jump on the pine tar train. But like,
Bauer did the right thing to get himself paid. I got no issue with that.
Absolutely.
My issue is him being like saying, oh, that's the only way to do it and it's bad, and then going and doing it. That's the problem. I think he's a huge hypocrite.
Right, to be fair.
Oh, he's doing it to prove a point.
Yeah, he well, the question is in 2021, does he come out? First of all, I hope he signs just so he stops talking. does he do it again? Right? Like because if he does it again, which if he wants to continue to be good, yes, is the answer. But I don't know. I don't know if he does it again, but it wouldn't shock me. I mean, if he wants to continue good results, that's what he should do. We're very far away from the NL East, but still.
Hey, bro, we know you could sign in the NL East.
Yeah, that's entirely. Who knows?
Yeah, listen, going. This discussion will make a lot of sense in 2 weeks when he's a Met. So,
you think he's going to the Mets? There's
been a lot of conversation about that, actually.
Yeah, I think that it's a big sensible sign for both sides because he's kind of a large personality. A lot of people don't really like him, or some people love him. I mean, I like him just because he's entertaining. LA. I mean, it's just kind of cool to follow him and see all the stupid stuff he does. I don't agree with everything. Like, I think it's entertaining. Like, just to see him throw a ball over center field that time, like, that's the moment that hooked me. Like, whenever he threw that ball over center field, I'm in. I don't care.
If he does go to the Mets, he's got to try and chuck a ball into the top hat with the apple at some point.
If he lands a target, that's what they need to do. That's what they need to do. They need to get him to sign there, and they'll be like, hey, if he lands in the apple, like free donuts for the entire state of New York the next day, something like that. And he'll just try to like launch it and land it in.
Or their local gas station is like 1 cent sodas. I don't know, based on Trevor Bauer's salary or something. I don't know. He needs to have like some crazy clause if he hits like the apple like X amount of times that he gets like some type of crazy bonus, and also he gives like free stuff out for that. Like, well, I don't know. That'd be awesome.
$1.2 million bonus related to get in the apple.
And you have to.
I do have some rationale for the Mets thought beyond just, oh, you know, Big Daddy Cohen with his billions. You know, everyone looks at the Mets with Cohen now, and they're like, okay, this team is going to be a dominant force in baseball for the foreseeable future. But you look at how the team is made up right now. They don't have a top 10 farm. They have some good guys, you know, Ronnie Mauricio, Josh Wolf, a handful of other guys, but then they don't necessarily have any extremely young core players in the majors either. Mm-hmm. If you took Jacob deGrom off the Mets roster, would the narrative around that team be the same? I mean, because that's what you're going to have to face in 2 or 3 years, because he's already in his mid-30s and he's not going to pitch like deGrom forever. So it's a case of, okay, you have to capitalize on having prime Jacob deGrom on that team right now. And what makes more sense than going out and signing, you know, the best pitcher on the market to pair with DeGrom? You already have an offensive core that's probably, you know, fringe top five in baseball in terms of lineup. All they're really missing is another guy to take the ball every 5 days behind DeGrom. I mean, you have Stroman, who's really good. You have Thor, who's really good, but they're not Bauer.
Nope.
No. And realistically, you got another – 3-4 years of this level DeGrom. Two to 4 years, what I'm saying.
He's honestly a good pitcher, barring any injury. He's going to be
I mean, elite DeGrom. 2 to 3, I maybe mean, 4 years.
Max Scherzer.
Then it'll be kind of like good too. Really – no, but Max Scherzer is – you've got to see he's already kind of –
he's like
37.
Yeah, something like that.
Remember, DeGrom's older than people think.
He's like 29.
No, he's 32, 33. Him and Kershaw are like a year apart in age.
Oh, man.
They're relatively the same age. But I actually agree. Like, DeGrom's probably got like 2 or 3 more like really, truly elite seasons left. And then from there, it's just sort of like hoping he can turn into a good pitcher for 2, 3 years. And then at that point, he'll be close to 40. And any pitcher close to 40, you have no idea what you're going to get. Like, if he's even still pitching by that point, like Justin Verlander in 2019 is a huge anomaly. Huge. So don't,
most guys turn into cologne.
Nah, most guys turn into what J Half. That's who they turn into.
J Half. Van Aaron.
Irrelevant. Irrelevant at that point. Like,
yes,
you have to work so hard just to keep it at the rate that you were at, that you're going to break down at some point. Like, I mean, it happens to the best of them. I mean,
yeah, your arm is not designed to throw a baseball. Like, the muscles in your arm are not designed to do that repeatedly for your entire life.
No.
There is a time limit on everyone's arm. And it usually hits around, for MLB type guys, it hits around 40 to 45. Is where they physically just can't throw the ball.
Plus your form different, but I don't know. Yeah, I think that it makes sense for them to sign him. Because if they're really going to push, it makes sense.
Springer's my guy. I think the Mets go after Springer. But I understand the
Springer makes way too much sense for with the Mets. I mean, just
that is a problem.
Like, I can already see it in my head when I think of Springer.
Like, the entire offseason, I've basically just been telling people, I was like, listen, he's going to get a 5-year, $135 million offer from the Mets, and he's going to take it. And like, they need him. They need two things offensively: a power right-handed bat and really good center field defense. He is both of those things. He fills their two offensive holes perfectly. Like, because I don't really buy into James McCann's offensive like prowess the last season and a half or so, right? I don't know how much of that is legit. I don't know how much of his like defensive improvements in 2020 were legit. So it's hard to know. But Springer fills the holes in their lineup. I think Bauer, I mean, if they sign both, which they can, then like, yeah, of course the narrative changes around the Mets completely. But as Jason said, take DeGrom out. If they don't make those moves, the Mets are in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. In 2 or 3 years, they're staring down the barrel of having what, Steven Matz as their number one pitcher.
Assuming in 2 or 3 years, they're the Nationals.
Yeah, exactly.
An average team with a big payroll.
The Nationals without the best hitter in baseball though, which is not even close to what the Nationals are right now.
Yeah.
Well, kind of going back to what you said, like the James McCann thing, being like a Chicago guy, you saw it. They went out and got a new catcher. They got Grandal. Mm-hmm. If you truly believe in James McCann and believe in what he did in, what was it, 2019, I believe, mm-hmm. was last year with him starting.
You don't let him go.
You don't go get another catcher. You don't let him go. If you don't get another catcher, you believe that this guy, he's not that old of a guy. He's still kind of in like the prime of his career, I guess you would say. But
yeah,
like, you don't go sign a new guy if you believe in him. You don't sign another catcher to take his spot. So there was kind of, I don't know who didn't see this, but there's definitely some red flags. He's 30 years old. He's still got life left.
That's actually a good point that I never really thought about, was why did the White Sox even sign Grandal in the first place if they really believed in McCann? Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, if his own team didn't fully believe in him and then got like one of the top two catchers on the market, what makes you think you should be paying him, you know, $40 million? Like, that's a great point. That's a really good point.
He's an all-star in 2019. You went on and signed another all-star catcher instead.
Yep.
Exactly.
That's a great point.
And you didn't even really split time with him. I mean, he had very few games behind the plate, really. He was more of just a DH in Chicago. And it was basically him and Edwin would just take off turns.
And honestly, who knew him better than his own team? Think about that. Like, just from that scouting point alone, like, you've seen him enough that you know that you just don't want him anymore for whatever price he wants. Like, that's crazy. I think you could even make that same argument about Bauer, maybe. I mean, that, like, if the Reds aren't willing to pay that man, and he was a Cy Young last year, I don't know.
I think the Reds offered him a contract already.
But, like, is he going to take it? No. He's probably not going to sign until –
He'll sign in spring. He'll spring sign training. In February. He'll sign in February. That's when he'll sign.
He's going to make so late many.
February, he'll sign.
He's going to be like a kid going to college for football, and he's going to have like 10 hats around him, and he's going to be like, all these guys offer me contracts.
No, he's going to have 32 hats. He's going to have every team's hat out there, and he's going to make the decision that way.
And he'll like burn one. He'll put like whipped cream on another.
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised. He might have a couple Korean League hats out there too. Just kind of throwing a little a little KBO action.
Oh my gosh. Maybe we do hate him and we just don't think about it. I don't know. I haven't thought about it enough, but we could talk
sudden
about
sudden realization on the podcast.
Yeah, maybe we do.
Slowly starting to happen.
Maybe, but it's, I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit fun, but we can talk about somebody who's a little bit fun is the Miami Marlins. I mean, they came out last year and they kind of were a pleasant surprise. I mean,
that was fun to watch. That team was fun. And I think they're going to be around with that starting staff.
Should be good. Yeah.
That's scary.
the only thing that scares me about them is they've been prone to trading their best players. But hopefully, like, with Derek Jeter at the helm, tells them maybe not trade our players.
Derek Jeter was at the helm when they traded out these players, wasn't
well,
he?
Well, after the, like, his first year. Spin, yeah, and he got rid of most of them. But, like,
and Yelich, that even, and Ozuna. Mm-hmm. And Gallon.
Ozuna, Yelly.
That outfield?
Stanton.
That outfield?
The – what was it?
Well, listen,
the,
they also have a – they also have a Dodgers, you know, executive tree person running the show now.
It's that so lady. What's her name?
That could make a huge difference.
Yeah,
Kim Ang. Kim Ang. Kim Ang is very, very smart. I've known people who have talked to her, and they're like, yeah, the phenomenal hire. She's very smart. The other thing about, like, if you look at pretty much – post-Stanton trade, if you look at what the Marlins have done, they've actually made a lot of really, really good moves. Like, just smart, low buy, you know, low buys, high reward kind of situations. Like,
minus trading away Castillo and Paddock.
Yeah.
Those are the two blemishes.
Yeah. But if you look at Jesus Aguilar, that was such a good signing for them. Picking up Garrett Cooper, another good move. You know, they've made a lot of
Starling Marte. That was a great trade for them.
That was a really good trade. You know, the Marlins, the thing about it is, like, I respect Jeter that in the essence of he realized that for them to be competitive, they have to build from the ground up. Yep. Like, we can't just go out and sign guys because we don't have the money for that. We just bought the team, right? Like, the cash flow isn't there, right? And they're not like Steve Cohen, who's worth, you know, $15 billion. Right. That's not the reality for them. But they realize is we have to build up our farm system, and their farm system is good.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good. I know some guys haven't worked out, but, like, there's a lot of potential sitting in that farm system. And, you know, even with their pitching staff, right? Sixto. I don't know if Sixto is, like, this going to be the swing and miss machine. He certainly got some of the stuff for it, but he doesn't throw his stuff to get swing and misses, which is a little concerning. But I think if he changes his approach, he could be really good. Alcantara throws ridiculously hard, but he's sort of the same as he pitches to contact. And it's like, there are so many guys who, like, throw 100 miles per hour and have good spin, but they throw these sinkers and try and pitch to contact. I'm like, why do you do that? Stop doing that. Throw your fastball. Stop throwing a sinker. Like Dustin May, Bruiser Gratterall, and, Sandy Alcantara and Sixto Sanchez, they're all the same, as they all throw ridiculously hard, but pitch to contact makes no sense. You know, I think for the Marlins too, just like Pablo Lopez is really good too. Like,
yeah,
he's really, really good. And I hope he pans out too. The other thing is their lineup could use some help. You know, Brian Anderson can hit. Like, I think Brian Anderson's one of the most underrated players in the league. That guy is good. Like, really, good, really good.
Too.
Yeah, right. He's a good defensive third baseman. He's a plus bat. Like, he's probably somebody who you could look to as, like, a 4 or 5 win player. But I doubt anyone outside of Miami or who are fans of the NL East really know who he is. Like, he's really, really good. But, you know.
Miguel Rojas, too, I think is in that same – vein. I think he's Miguel one of the most underrated hitters in baseball. He's fantastic.
He's such a good defender.
He also got, like, Lewis Brinson's pretty good too. Like,
he made some strides in 2020. He changed his approach a little bit.
I so want Brinson to be good.
He's such a great athlete. He's such a great athlete. Like, I look at him and go, you should be an all-star. Like, you're just not. Like, but I want you to be so bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at that trade alone they gave up Yelich, which looking back hurts. But, I mean, you got
Yamamoto. The return at the time, it was pretty good, right though. Now.
Yamamoto's a good pitcher.
Yeah, Monty Harrison.
And you got Monty Harrison and Lewis Brinson.
And
Those are good prospects. Like, those are – at the time, for what Yelich was, that was a good return.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it looks bad because he goes to Milwaukee and they say, hey, why don't you try and hit fly balls? And then – you know, it turns out he can be really good at it. Like, it's not really – it's also like Marlins Park is just like it kills power. Like, how Stanton hit a lot of home runs there is really, really something. But it kills power, that park.
Well, he hit half of his home runs in Atlanta. That's how he did it.
That's true. Stanton didn't actually – I think of his 59 home runs, I don't remember how many were actually at home, but it was a pretty even split, if I recall.
Well, that's also Stanton. He's got
freak
strength. So
remember of the I remember looking at the max exit velocity of the last 5 year leaderboard, and it's all Stanton. And he's barely played in 2020 and 2019, and he still had the hardest hit balls of the year. Like, that's so – it's hilarious. It's so funny. But,
I think the scariest part about him is it's just easy power, too. Like, doesn't look like he's exerting that much energy in these.
I remember opening day when he hit the home run off Scherzer, and I was just like, oh man, Stan's in a groove. Oh, God, this is going to be a tough year for the people of the East. And then he got hurt, and then it was like, there it is. Yeah. But I mean, the Marlins, I respect the Marlins because I think they, how they handled the whole COVID situation was obviously a deep mess and everything. But I respect the players, overcoming that adversity and everything. But
they need to get a new manager, though. Don Mattingly is just the complete wrong guy to lead that group of players.
I actually agree with that. Like, I don't think Don Mattingly is the guy that can take them to the next level of, like, he's good for, sort of being this guy who gets them ready to go, but I don't think he's the guy that takes them to the next level.
I think the big thing that Mattingly does for them is he takes all the criticism off of the players, which can be helpful for a young team. But once that team really starts pushing towards, contending for something, I don't think I don't think he has the coaching chops in general to be able to guide that team to where they want to go.
I agree. I agree with that.
I think that's a good point. Yeah, because like he's kind of good in the interim just to get them to the point where they can be really competitive. And then once they're competitive, they almost need somebody else who can actually manage them very well and kind of gel with them. And I think that's something that's going to be interesting because they have a lot of young guys right now and a lot of guys who really don't have any like blocks from the limelight. Because you see like big teams like the Dodgers, like some of their prospects, they're not even getting really shined on. Like they're just kind of like they show up and they're not even like a big deal. There's like, okay, but like on the Marlins, you're a huge deal. Like you're like the number one prospect. You're coming up. Like you are expected to do so much.
Well, the difference between the Dodgers and the Marlins is the Dodgers have those guys already in place that like are kind of like studs, like obviously like Mookie,
Bellinger,
Kershaw, Bellinger, all those guys. When you pull up like a Dustin May, if he struggles early on in his career,
you send him back down. Nobody
knows. Struggles early on, you send him back down. You're still
and then Tony Gonsolin comes up.
Team. And if he does well, it's just another piece to your line. It's not like, hey, like we're pulling up, like especially like the Marlins, we're pulling up Sandy Alcantara, and he struggled.
That's a big deal. Yeah,
that's a huge hit to
and your career. Line. Might be over.
Huge hit to your team. Whereas if Dustin May comes up and struggles. All right, we're still we lost like two more games. All right, sweet. We're still in first place by like 10 games.
And send it back down, work on his stuff, and he doesn't have any like psychological issues because of that. Because a lot of times when you put too much pressure on a guy, they're not gonna shine.
I think that's part of the problem with Brinson too, right? Is like when he came to the Marlins, he was hyped up as like the prospect. I think his prospect ranking was like top 30 in all of baseball, and the Marlins were sort of like, he's gonna be the next big face of our franchise, right? And like he came up and he struggled because there was so much pressure on him and he was swinging at everything and it was clear he was just like in his own head a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the problem. Once Brinson has sort of like realized like I just got to play my game, I got to do what I'm good at, not try and do too much and just play, hit like I know I can, and things will come around. But I agree with everything. That the difference is when the Marlins call up a prospect, they've been waiting years for this, right? That like these guys, these are the guys they've been hyping up and everything. It's sort of like when the Astros, when the Correas and the Bregmans and the Springers, right? When they started showing up, this is the same situation. Was they were hyping up all these guys and now they're finally here, right? Now, but like there's a lot of pressure in that, especially for number one overall picks and everything, or number one overall prospects. And with the Dodgers, as you said, like the pressure is just not there because you're often competing with like a Corey Seager. If you're Gavin Lux, right? Your competition for your job is a guy who just won World Series MVP and a top five shortstop in baseball. And then, Kike Hernandez and Chris Taylor, who are also very good players, right? So if you struggle, all right, don't worry about it, man. There's like, there's no pressure because there are other guys who can fill your role. Whereas when you struggle on the Marlins, they're like, well, we kind of need you to perform because we're relying on you to win games. Mm-hmm. And that hurts. That's hard. Like, so I that's a great point that like, the difference when they call up prospects for the Marlins is there's so much more pressure to perform, even if there's not media pressure. But with the Dodgers, it's like, if you don't perform, it's no big deal.
Yeah, with Brinson specifically, I mean, you go back to 2017, right after that trade happened, and I remember there were a ton of articles that offseason and even early in the season where they were talking about, like, the big three outfield prospects in Major League Baseball. It was Lewis Brinson, Victor Robles, Ronald Acuna Jr., mm-hmm. and, like, all three in the same division, and just being – I mean, I can just think of the pressure of Brinson being compared to these guys. And then seeing Acuna come up and just kill it from the jump and knowing that you've been compared to this guy, like, from the moment you step foot in that division, I mean, the pressure must be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that's the thing I liked about having Manley as a coach, obviously, early on. First off, he takes pressure off his players. He shields his players. He is that guy where, hey, we're in an interview. Something went wrong. Blame it on me. It was me. I put him in a bad situation. Mm-hmm. I tried to get him to do this. He's not good at this, but we needed this to happen. He struggled because of me. And he really kind of just made it so that way. That team, it wasn't like Brinson. Like, you need to go out there and hit 20 home runs. You need to go replace where – I
tried to say that.
But he might have, but he probably wanted that. But he's not like, hey, you need to hit a ton of home runs. You need to replace – because we traded Yelich for you. You need to replace Yelich. No, that he said, we got eight other guys in our lineup every day. If you do your job, you get on base, you score runs, I don't care how it gets done. Mm-hmm. And that's what Manuel's kind of career's been like. It's not like, hey, like, we need just to have a bunch of guys like, hey, you are the guy. You are going to get the job done. It is, we're going to set up a lineup in order to go win a baseball game. And if you do what you're supposed to do and you play your game, we're going to win a lot of baseball games because mm-hmm. you are a part of the team. You're not the team. It's not just you. There's a bunch of other guys around to support you and help you. And that was the coolest thing about Miami this year was it wasn't like, oh crap. Like, one guy comes up, intentionally walk him because you don't want him to beat.
Exactly.
Every single guy, if he does his job, can beat.
Except for Acuna whenever he starts to get good.
Sure. Yeah. And I think like a good point kind of off of that, like talking about how prospects, if you shield them a little bit, I think that it's pretty good. I think it's kind of like a good analogy is like you have a turkey in the oven, and if the turkey's in the oven and you're not taking the temperature of it and you're not seeing if it's really ready or not, and you just pull it out, the turkey might be ready. So it might be an Acuna and it might be really good and it might be like, ah, perfect.
You're trying to make me hungry?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a little bit hungry right now. But honestly, you pull it out, it might be, you know, an Acuna and you might be, man, this is awesome. Or you might pull it out and it might have a little bit of cold stuff still in the middle and you're like, man, like, what's going on here? And so, like, kind of like situation, like, I think of Allie Rushman. I'm a little bit afraid for him, but I think he's a competitor and he'll compete still. Like, you get him up to the major league level, and is he ready? And if he is ready, awesome. Then he's going to be – because he's expected to be so much. He's expected to be the next great player, like, since, like, Bryce Harper, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah.
That's why I'm glad they didn't bring him up this year.
Exactly.
I'm so glad they didn't, because you don't want to throw him, especially with, like, the whole it's like COVID season. You didn't have that real preseason to like prep him, get him facing even your own guys in Baltimore. They're not great. There's not a bunch of great pitchers, but they're still MLB pitchers. And if you face them, you can see he's got. And if he's not ready in the preseason, he sure is not going to be ready to go out there and face guys like Max Scherzer every night. So why would you pull him up? Leave him in the minors for another year or another whatever, 3 months, 2 months, whatever you need, he needs to get ready. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Baltimore is going to end up doing is next year. He's going to be on the sprint training roster. That is a fact. He will be
100%.
Exactly. Like, kind of like that developmental work, I think, is like what we're alluding to. Like, you have a guy in the major league, like the Dodgers, he didn't get all the developmental work he wants, has a guy who's probably attending to every single need he has and is doing analytics on a swing to figure out how he can be more competitive at a major league level. Another team
can confirm they do that.
Hurrying. They're just kind of hurrying to figure it out and say, I don't know.
Because they need it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's like a big thing of prospects. And I think the Marlins could be good if they get past this first little wave of these youth guys and they just do their job and some of these other young guys come up, I think they'll be pretty competitive.
Two things off your point about Rushman. I 100% agree. And like, I'm glad they didn't pull him up because the East, we haven't really talked about it. The East had some great pitching in 2020, the whole region.
Oh,
just like that was when the Cy Young was being announced, right? Of Darvish versus Bauer versus DeGrom. I thought it should have been DeGrom because he faced so much better competition. Like, no offense, but Bauer and DeGrom, Bauer and Darvish are great, but, and so was Bieber, but they faced what? Where the Twins were the only offense in the entire Central region. Oh, and the White Sox that had an above average offense, right? Oh. Something like that.
NL Central was kind of garbo. So
yeah.
The NL Central day in and day out offensively, but defensively was where the strength was.
So I'm glad they didn't pull up Rutschman because on any given night, it's like, all right, well, you just faced Gerrit Cole. So how are you feeling about going up against Jacob DeGrom tomorrow? Or how do you feel about going up against the Rays and their entire pitching staff for three games, wow, right? Like, it would be nuts. The other point is that the amount of pressure that's going to be on Jason Dominguez, I think is how you say it, is going to be astronomical. I mean, he's 16 and they're like, oh yeah, his comps are Mickey Mantle and Mike Trout. Like, luckily he's on the Yankees, right? But that's also bad for him because when he comes up, they're going to be like, hey, you got to deal with the New York media pressure, which is insane. Whether, how real it is on a player's mental fortitude, we've seen. Like, I truly believe that if AJ Burnett had been basically the same quality of pitcher he was everywhere else when he was with the Yankees, the guy would probably be getting Hall of Fame votes, right?
Yeah.
Because he was really good. But he was so bad for the Yankees that it probably killed his Hall of Fame chances.
I agree.
Right? And it was because he couldn't he couldn't handle the New York pressure. You're just like, I know some people talk about it with Sonny Gray and stuff. I don't think it's as valid there. But with AJ Burnett, I think it's pretty valid. And so Dominguez is going to have to deal with that. Then he's going to have to deal with probably by the time he comes up, right? Hicks is in center field now, Judge is in right field. I don't know who their left fielder is going to be right now, probably Frazier. But, Hicks and Judge are going to be over 30 by the time Dominguez is ready to come up, right? So they're going to be fading. So they're going to need him at that point by the time he's coming up in the outfield. So the pressure is going to be high. And I think that's where it is with the Marlins and some of their prospects and why they haven't worked is like, Jazz Chisholm came up and he wasn't very good offensively, but I think it's also because there was pressure on him to like perform right away. They're like, hey, we're calling you up in the middle of a playoff race. Like we need you to perform for us to get in. Right. And they probably told the same thing to Monte Harrison and some of their other, Lewin Diaz, right?
Yes.
They probably told them all three of them, like, we need you guys to perform. Like, we're calling you up because we believe in you. And we need you to perform. And they probably got that in their head and struggled a bit, but that doesn't make them any less fun or exciting. Like I would still believe in those guys to be above average MLB players someday.
Yep. Well, the other thing that doesn't get talked about enough is especially with like you said, he's 16 years old. What were you doing in 16 and 21? I mean, we were in college, obviously we go out to parties. Imagine that, having money and being in New York City. Like I'm going to switch to a different sport for a second. Josh Jacobs today, but he's a young guy. He's a rookie in the NFL, second year in the NFL. Yeah. He's got a DUI. He's in Vegas. There's a reason why he's in Vegas. Like, it's a part of that is also like the atmosphere you're in. It's a big city. There's a lot of fun things to do. He probably hasn't been in a lot of big cities in his life, to be fully honest, where you live in New York City. There's a lot of stuff to do that can get you in trouble. And like you saw it with CeCe Sabathia. There's a documentary I watched From Under the Grapefruit Tree, and you saw it.
Great.
He had great documentary, but he had a lot of issues with alcoholism, and he had his entire postseason because of it, because he had to go to rehab for it. That definitely is a factor as well, because you're in a huge city, you're a young kid, you're making money, you're expecting to be the next like Barry Bonds, the next great hitter in MLB history.
So many big names.
Now you got that in your head.
I'm worried about that with Juan Soto, right? Juan is obviously an amazing hitter. I mean, I don't think Jason called him the best hitter in baseball. He was the best hitter in baseball in 2020. I agree with that. But as long as Mike Trout exists until that's what he did again.
I also don't think that Soto's 2020 is going to be a norm for him. I mean, there are some concerning things about his 2020 that lead me to believe that at the very least, the power is not going to be there as much going forward. But no. I mean, he's exceptional.
he's so good. But like now, I mean, Mike Petriello calls him, like, you know, says, I don't think we should put Barry Bonds pressure on him. But I'm like, don't do that. Don't put that butt out there. Like, Soto is still, you know, he's 22, or is he 20? Did he turn 23 recently, or did he turn 22?
He's going to turn, 23.
He'll be 23 by next season.
He just turned 22 because he's a year behind Acuna, and Acuna just turned 23 a couple weeks ago.
Got it. Right. So he's 22, and Mike Petriello's talking about, oh, he's the next Barry Bonds. No, don't do that. Like, don't say stuff like that. It's like, we can fully appreciate a player's talent without comparing him to, oh, he's, you know, like with Sixto, they're saying, oh, he's the next Pedro. Don't
he's
do that.
The next Sixto. He's the next Juan. He's
Sixto. He does what he does, and he does it well. Don't try and put anything else on him. And that's part of the pressure, is like, I know organizations are better about it now. But like back in like the 80s and 90s and stuff, when prospects would come up, you know, they would put that pressure on their players themselves, right? Like the teams would do that to them. Now it's sort of like, hey, take your time. Like, you know, they're willing to take chances, you know, be patient and stuff. You know, some teams can only be so patient, right? Like eventually you got to start performing, or else, you know, they just were like, we got to move on, right? It just didn't work. But yeah, I mean, I want the Marlins to be good because I like them and they're exciting, but I'm worried that people are going to be putting so much pressure on these prospects, and they've put all of their, you know, resources into these prospects, as they should, you know, as a team like that should. I don't think they'll be a 500 team. They could be more than that, but I think 2021, they take a step down a bit, just because over a course of a full season, the prospects sort of, like, you know, Miguel Rojas doesn't hit, you know, 360 over a full season, right? Like, and stuff like that. But also, like, you know, I think their pitching is certainly a front three of Sixto, Pablo Lopez, and Sandy Alcantara is good. Like, that's not bad. Like, that certainly gonna compete. So
yeah, I mean, you talk about the hype, and I think it was just yesterday or the day before, I saw a tweet from one of the various offshoot MLB accounts talking about how the Marlins were going to be a top five rotation in baseball next season. And I saw that, and I did a double take. I'm like, how, like, first of all, it's a completely ridiculous claim to make, because I don't think they're even close to top five, but just to hype that rotation up to that point where I don't think any pitcher in that rotation even has a full MLB season under their belt is outrageous.
Well, like you said, like, no, no full season. Most of these guys have never played 162 games. Yeah, you're a starter, you're going every 5 days, but I highly doubt any of these guys in their entire life have ever thrown over 150 innings in their life.
When you're in September and you've made 28 starts, you're not gonna have your best stuff. No. Like, it's more than likely, like, you're just trying to salvage every start at that point. Like,
Sixto was a great example of that, because he came up in 2020 and he put the lights out, like, from the start.
Early, he was great.
And then you get to the end of the season, his last 2-3 starts at the end of the regular season, and then in the postseason, he just fell apart. He couldn't get anyone out. And then you get to that last start of the season in the playoffs, and I think the Braves put up like 7 or 8 runs on him in that last postseason start. I mean, teams just started to figure him out, and he didn't even
get
a
good for him in the long
run.
Season. Yeah, like, which is good for him in the long run, because it shows that, like, hey, I learned something about myself, right? Like, I learned that I need to have more stamina. I need to be able to change my pitch mixes as games go on, right? Like, I can't just rely on stuff that worked early. It's not necessarily going to work when I face a team again, right? So it was good for him to get roughed up early. But it was also, like, teams now saying, like, oh, somebody saying the Marlins are going to have a top five rotation, like, maybe in like 3 years, right? Like, you know, if their pitching prospects really pan out and everything, right? But putting that kind of pressure on these prospects is bad. It's just bad. Don't, it's for teams like that, it's bad. For the Dodgers, it's like, all right, yeah, you could put a ton of pressure on Gavin Lux because he plays for the Dodgers, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, they're doing the same thing with Ian Anderson too. I mean, after they signed Morton, MLB put out that picture where it was like, is this the best rotation in baseball? And threw Anderson's face on there.
It's not.
Like, Ian Anderson kind of crumbled at the end of the season too. He had two really good postseason starts, and then the Dodgers figured him out twice. And you know, it's the Dodgers are the Dodgers, but like, he's never thrown 150 innings in a season. He's never even come close to that. He's a really good pitcher, but to put the expectation of him being a key piece of the best rotation in baseball at 21 years old, I mean, I feel like just the media and the fan base of baseball in general, we become spoiled by guys like Soto, Tatis, Acuna, like these guys who come up and just dominate
immediately.
You know, immediately. And that's not the norm, but everyone expects it now.
Yeah. I mean, 100% agree with Jason. Like, the conversation around prospects is just so outrageous. Like, just so, so outrageous. We have sort of gotten into like this idea that they're immediately going to come up and be good, when I think for 90% of prospects, like Mike Trout, he comes up and he failed. He bad his first like 40 games of that, you know, first season per se. But then the next year he comes back and is immediately taken over as the best player in baseball, right?
He's been the best player in baseball since his second year, hands down. There's probably not anyone that's, I mean,
his official rookie year, he's been the best player in baseball since, right? Yeah. But he failed. Like, he failed those first 40 games of that previous season.
Absolutely.
But that was good for him. Failing is good for prospects because it teaches them that they have still a lot to learn. Guys like Tatis, Acuna, and Soto, as Jason said, they're so rare, but they totally warp our perception of them.
Well, like you said,
it just sucks that we got three of them in like the same 18-month period, because it's hard for a casual fan to like understand how rare it is to get one of those guys, let alone three of them out of the same class of prospects. I mean, that's just insane.
And like you said, like, baseball is a huge failure sport. 70% of the time, especially a hitter, 7% of the time you're failing, and that's considered elite almost.
Yeah.
If you're failing 67% of the time, that's
you get a big contract.
You get a huge contract from that. But you're still failing. Like, you're not getting your job done the majority of the time. And then with six, though, like, he threw 39 innings last year. And especially with, like,
that's nothing.
That's nothing. That's reliever. That's reliever status.
That's like 1 month.
That's a month and a half, 2 months of an elite starting pitcher. That's what it is. Month and a half. And you can't really say who he's going to be, especially considering most of the prospects that come up and be like, oh, this guy's going to be late. He's going to be the next guy. Most of these guys are coming out of college where they are the top pitcher in their college, if not one of them. They're throwing 80, 90 innings of just shutdown baseball, but you're not facing the same level of talent in college. You're not facing the same level of talent in the minors. These guys, the hitters are known. A lot of hitters, especially if you see guys that are not really like elite guys even. Like, you can go, Tommy La Stella. Tommy La Stella is a perfect example. He's not an elite hitter, average hitter, but he's going to frustrate the heck out of you. And your 96-mile-per-hour fastball, he's just going to foul it off. And in college, that thing's not getting fouled off. So you're being put in play or a strikeout 90% of the time. And you don't really see a lot of foul balls in the minors either, because that too, if they do, it's a lot of hard hit balls down the line that just get out of play or something like that. Whereas in the MLB, you got guys that you throw a phenomenal pitch, he's just going to swing it and just put it in the dugout. And he doesn't care. All right, I live for another pitch. And he's going to frustrate you. And until you see that, especially at MLB level, you're not going to be successful.
Yeah.
Guy we talked about, Jesus Aguilar, he's the king of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't remember how many times last season I got frustrated watching him foul off Max Fried slider curveball that 9 out of 10 other players would have struck out on, and just keeps fouling him off.
Exactly.
There was one plate appearance in the DS against Ian Anderson that I can't get out of my head like months later, where he took 12, 13 pitches from Ian Anderson, and they were all really good pitches. I mean, good changeups, good fastballs up in the zone, and he just fouled off like 8 or 9 pitches in a row, and then finally, you know, smoked one down the line for a double. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be so frustrating as a young pitcher going up against good veteran hitters like that, who they've never faced that quality of hitter coming up through the minors, and probably not even in college or high school. I mean, it's a totally different level.
Mm-hmm. Because you're facing a bunch of guys, like, especially like you talk about that Ian Anderson at bat, those foul balls, he had no intention of hitting that thing. His entire goal was, I'm going to make contact and just flip it out of play. That's it. I'm just going to put the ball in foul territory. I'm going to live seeing our pitch until I get a pitch that I can drop. And you don't see that, because a lot of guys, especially when they get down early in college, and you're facing a good pitcher, it's like, oh crap, the at-bat's over. Let's just swing and try to put the ball in play. Not thinking, hey, I can frustrate this guy. I can get him to throw me an extra six pitches, because I can just hit it down the line. It's not going to get fair, but I love to see another pitch. And that's the thing that you don't really see a lot in young guys, is especially pitchers, is the ability to keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going and fighting against these guys. And at some point, they're just going to give up and then be like, all right, fine, put the ball in play. We'll see what happens. And that's something that really they have to learn, how to just not give up and just keep fighting and make an even better pitch than the pitch you already made, which is hard to do in the first place.
True. Yeah. I think kind of a good bridge off of that is talking about, like, one guy who historically didn't fail at hitting a lot of home runs in his life, Barry Bonds. I know we mentioned him a little bit earlier. And, I mean, this one's pretty controversial for me, and this will probably bring a little bit at the end of the show, too. But would you guys vote for him to be in the Hall of Fame? I mean, I say yes, but I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. 100. He was a Hall of Famer before he ever used steroids. By the time he got to the end of the 90s, he was already a Hall of Famer.
For Bonds, it's really just a larger conversation about what really matters in Hall of Fame voting and what doesn't. I don't think steroids matter. Like, whether you've taken them, especially for guys like him, they put in Bud Selig in the Hall of Fame. Like, just if you put in Bud Selig, like, and don't put in Bonds or Clemens or Sosa or McGuire and all these guys who, like, notoriously juiced during that time period, I mean, it's hypocritical, right? Like, it's not at all consistent. And the voters seem to care more about steroids than anything, for some reason, for off-field stuff. But, you know, the Hall of Fame voting requires to look at the so-and-so character, right, of a player, and let's look at their off-the-field stuff. In the 90s, Bonds was accused by his wife of domestic violence. Like, and how one views it, right, is up to them. And, like, if you only want to view it like the play on the field is the only thing that matters, that's fine. Like, I got no issue with that. You know, but to me, like, the Hall of Fame is like the highest honor someone can have as a player, right? And so I wrestle with a lot. Trust me, I don't even have a vote. And, like, I have, like, there are times I've been up at night, like, thinking about, do I vote for a guy like Bonds because he did something terrible? And am I rewarding a bad person with a high honor if I'm doing that? And, like, I don't know the answer to that. But I wrestle with that all the time. I got no issue with people who say they vote for Bonds, because if I really just wasn't really to look at character at all, I would vote for Bonds. He's the greatest player of all time. Like, there's no doubt about it. But because of, like, this off the field issue that I have with Bonds, it's hard to know. He wasn't on my mock ballot, but I could vote for him if the voting criteria were to change. Right. But is he a Hall of Fame player because of what he did on the field? Yes. Do steroids matter? No. Like, they don't matter. If you don't want to vote for Manny Ramirez because he was suspended for steroids, I guess that's an okay line to draw, because he technically violated rules, right? And if that's the line you want to draw, I'm okay with that. I got no issue with that. But I would still vote for Manny Ramirez too if I were, again, he also was accused of domestic violence. So it just so happens that a lot of the players that were taking steroids also happened to be terrible people off the field in other aspects. It just so happened it worked out like that. But, like, I wrestle with that. I don't expect everyone else to, like, agree with me on that, and that's fine. If you want to take sort of, like, morals out of the whole Hall of Fame argument, that's fine. I would actually be more happy with that, because it means I don't have to think about it, right? I just vote.
But it's a good argument, because I'm one of those people who's on the other side of Max, where I'm like, okay, I don't really take off-field stuff into consideration at all. For me, it's all about on-field performance. But my reasoning for that is, just because you look at the people who are already in the Hall, and if you're going to start taking character into account now with the character clause, mm-hmm. how do you equate, you know, Andrew Jones, Barry Bonds, you know, the three other players on this ballot who are accused of domestic violence? How do you level that with, you know, the personal character flaws of the people who are already in the Hall of Fame? How do you balance, you know, that with the people on the ballot right now? It's more morally convenient. And, you know, that's not how it should be. But that's how I think it needs to be. It's just more morally convenient to only consider what they do on the field.
I think the only exception to like character would be Curt Schilling, just because the difference between Curt Schilling and the other guys,
it gives him a platform.
For
his views.
Yeah, which his views are like, they're terrible. They're horrible hate. And the difference is like Bonds is not going to go up there on the Hall of Fame stage and advocate for hitting women, right? He's not going to go out there and say, I got in, I am here where I am today because I hit my wife, right? Like that's not going to happen. But Schilling is going to go out there and on that podium, and he's going to say some really wild and offensive things. And like voting for that means that you're allowing him to do that and you're giving him that platform. And I can't,
and even beyond that podium, he's going to use his Hall of Fame induction. He's going to use that for personal gain. He's going to use it to make money and to further, you know, spread his views to people with that expanded audience.
Right. So if you want to vote for Bonds, I got no issue with that. Schilling's the only one I really argue like hard against, but everyone else, I'm sort of like, yeah, that's fine. Like if someone says, I'm going to vote for Roger Clemens, I'm sort of like, that's fine. Like, he might have had an affair with an underage woman that led her to kill herself from the trauma. Not great. But like, if you want to vote for him, that's fine. And also, like, the precedent of Hall of Fame voting in the past, they didn't care about character until Mark McGwire showed up.
Nope. Well, like, that's the first time. Like you said, like Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth had to play right field because he was hung over for half the games and was shaded in afternoon games in Yankee Stadium. Right field is the position that shaded. And he was hung over from the night before. So he didn't play right field because of that reason. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame because he was out drinking every night before a game? To the point where he could still be hung or a little drunk during the game. And he's still
dozens of horrible people in the Hall of Fame already. And people always like, so would you remove him? Well, I mean, like, personally speaking, yeah, of course I would. Like, you know, but if we're gonna, like, it's about being consistent with it, right? Too is like, if I value, like, there are a couple things. It's like being consistent, and two, I can't do anything to stop those people already being in, but I can do something now to stop these people, which is a big difference. But again, it's sort of like, I wish the Hall of Fame would just say we're removing the character clause, because then it's just so much easier.
Yeah,
because right then the only thing that matters is your play on the field, which is what should be. But then I have to, like, because they include it, you know, I wrestle with the fact of like, does it matter? Should it matter? I don't know. And like, I don't blame anybody who just says I'm not going to look at it, because in the history of the Hall of Fame voting, they haven't looked at it.
Yeah, and Max says that it's only since McGwire that they care about character. But there's recent examples that show they still don't really care about character except for when it suits them. Chipper Jones was a first ballot selection.
The dude said Sandy Hook was fake.
Yeah, he said Sandy Hook was fake. He was another domestic abuser. He cheated on two different wives. I mean, Chipper Jones personally is not a good person, but he was a first ballot, and he got in easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like there's.
The character clause only applies when the voters feel the need to have it be convenient for that specific person.
Yeah, they also only apply it to steroids.
Yep. Like, did you see the guy this last couple weeks, and he was posting his ballot? He's like a first ballot. Like, this is his first time voting. He goes, here's my ballot. And it's blank. He didn't vote for anybody.
Didn't vote for anybody. Like, that guy sucks.
Like, if you really want to, you can find a reason to not vote for any player ever to get in the Hall of Fame. If you really want to.
At least it's not the guy who only voted for Omar Vizquel. That's worse.
Like, especially he posted on Twitter. If he's voting again next year, there's something really wrong. But there's a different issue.
What's wild to me is like, there you have the blank ballots, bad. And then there was like the Vizquel Schilling only ballot, and it's like, like that's somehow like, how is this somehow worse? But it is somehow worse.
Literally judge the quality of the entire ballot by whether or not Omar Vizquel is on it. I've noticed that going through the ballots. If Vizquel is on the ballot, then the rest of the ballot inevitably is going to be bad.
I like the biggest thing I look for, I think the only one candidate there's no argument against, legitimately, like just no good ones, is Scott Rolen. Scott Rolen should be on every single ballot.
I 100% agree with that.
He's a good human being. He was a great defender, a good hitter, and was just a great player. Like, he got like career 70 WAR in both versions, basically. He, mm-hmm. that flies into the Hall of Fame. And so
he's also on a lot of good teams.
He was a critical part of some really good teams. Didn't he had like a 9-win season for the Cardinals in 2004, right? Like that, he's a big time player. He was great prime, good longevity. And yet somehow like there are people's like, he only had 330 home runs. So, and I'm like, what?
How many home runs did you hit?
Yeah. How many home runs did you hit? Exactly. But so Scott Rolen's the only guy in my mind where it's like, there's no argument. He should be on every single ballot. There's also like this idea that some people won't vote. I know that it's not really apparent this year because, you know, the first time guys, or Hudson and Burley are really the only two who should get any really real consideration, in my opinion. But, you know,
I think Billy Wagner is another kind of slam dunk guy, but I value relievers differently than most people do.
I agree. Like, I would vote for what I don't think there's a good argument against Wagner outside of like, I don't vote for relievers. I don't think that's a good argument, but like, some people are just like, Mo's the only reliever that deserves to be in. And I respect their consistency because they're like, yeah, no other reliever other than Mo. But I don't agree with that, but I would say Billy Wagner should be in. But I remember, what was it? Somebody didn't vote for, I think it was Roy Halladay, because they're like, well, Roy Halladay wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I was like, dude, who cares? Like, the question should be, are they a Hall of Famer or are they not? Like, that's the only question that should matter. But it's not. It's not the only question. And it's stupid. The Hall of Fame voting process is so stupid. And I think this year it's gotten talked about more than any other year. But this year has just sort of shed the light on just how ridiculous this whole process is.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
I also think you shouldn't be able to post your ballot anywhere. It should just be you just do it. And you just got to have lucky enough to be able to vote. That's kind of cool. Like, don't be like posting like, hey, like, I didn't vote for anybody this year because I don't think anybody's available. It should get in. Like,
I think if you post your ballot, you should give your reasons. Like, we need to understand your logic. Like, if you don't vote for anybody and then just like don't say anything of just like, here's my ballot.
He did it so we can do what we're doing right now.
Yeah, and complain about
doing it so that way he can get talked about. Like, that's the only logical explanation.
Like
that's just comparison.
Trent Richardson, the Reds beat writer for The Athletic.
Right? Oh, man, his article was fantastic.
His thread on Twitter about his ballot was marvelous. Yes. Like, just so he clearly, like, that's a guy who's like, he clearly cares, like, and he wants people to understand his logic. And it was great. And I really, really respect him for that and everything. So I wish if every writer did it like that, it would greatly solve a lot of problems, but also like, just, I don't know if the solution is, but letting writers decide who gets in is also sort of flawed too.
Yeah. It would be interesting.
The whole format is just broken.
Yeah. Ace of Spader, Ryan Spader, I think is his name. He's been doing like the player ballots, like former players vote and everything like that. I don't know if because that's what the Veterans Committee basically is. But like, I don't know if players should get in on the process. I don't know if it's like we need to include more people in on the process. I don't know what the solution is, but I know that the way it's working now is just not working.
What do you guys think? It was like owners, like the owners did it. And they had like a group, just like all the owners got together and had a discussion every year about who's on the ballot.
I don't know. The owner, maybe this current group of owners is not the best. I don't know if I should say that because I want a job, but still.
I think the best like one voter pool solution is to have the Hall of Famers vote for the Hall of Famers.
That'd be interesting.
Probably,
that won't be interesting. Heisman a little bit.
But probably splitting it between, like, give the Hall of Famers the vote in addition to the writers who also vote. I feel like that would fix a lot of the problems with the process if you split it.
People who actually played the game and understand it probably should be voting more so than like media people.
Yeah, it's also like media people are biased, right? There's a large people out there who don't vote for Barry Bonds just because he was a
right. I can see that.
Like, there are people out there who hold the grudge against Bonds. And
Dan Clemens. Shaughnessy.
Yeah. Dan Shaughnessy. He's explicitly said, like, I don't vote for Bonds because he was just like not cool or anything. And it's like, dude, I don't care that he was kind of a to you. Like, if you think he's a Hall of Famer, you should say that. You shouldn't say, I'm not voting for him out of spite. Like, that's ridiculous. But there are voters who do that. The whole process, like, yeah, maybe including the Hall of Famers is a good idea. I the other problem is like there's already 400 people who vote, right? And yep. getting 400 people to decide, so like 300 people to agree on one thing is very, very hard. Like so now if you expand it, it gets even harder, yep. right?
Just let Hank Aaron decide on his own. He is of high moral character. I trust his judgment.
That would work. Well, it, like you were saying, like the reporter, like if the reporters are voting, like is, this is a different sport, but in football, if reporters voted on who gets in the Hall of Fame, Marshawn Lynch would never make it in.
Oh yeah,
he was an elite running back for years with multiple different teams, and he just every time he got in a meeting with like reporters, he would just be a jerk and just be an asshole to all of them. And it's just
I mean, that's the same reason it took D.O. so long to get in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly.
Imagine like when Bill Belichick, if they had to vote Bill Belichick, they'd be like, ah, screw this guy.
Belichick would never be a Hall of Fame coach.
Greg Popovich would be like,
Popovich would never be in. Popovich would get like 10 people to vote for him, and it would be all from the San Antonio Spurs or like reporters because he was nice to them. He was horrible to everyone else. He still is, but like you can't, like the writers, they have their own bias because they want to talk to these guys because if they get like a quote from Barry Bonds in their article, it helps their sales, it helps their publicity, helps them in a lot of ways. And if he doesn't want to talk to them, oh well, I'm not going to vote for you then. Have fun not being in the Hall of Fame because you didn't help me. Why would I help you out now? And that's not how it should be. It should be based off of what do you do, who are you, what did you bring to the sport? And Barry Bonds brought a ton to the sport in his career. So he should be in.
Yeah. Bonds is, as I've said, if you want to vote for him, fine. I will talk about the player that he was and say that he was the greatest player. Frankly, maybe Mike Trout might be the only exception, but like he's the greatest player I've ever seen in my life. Like,
yeah,
and will be the greatest player I've ever seen in my life. And they're keeping him out for the wrong reasons.
I agree. I completely agree. If you get intentionally walked as much as he did, you're pretty good at it.
If you have a six on base percentage of .603 in a season, then that alone should get you into the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. I think one last thing here we can do to wrap up is one hot take from each of us for this next season. So we can just kind of go around the room here. We can start with Max. What's your hot take for this 2020 season?
My hot take for the 2021 season is the Mariners are going to finish second in the West.
Oh. Who finishes first?
Don't know that, but I know the Mariners will finish second.
I like it.
What are you, Jason?
So my hot take for the 2021 season is that Max Fried wins the NL Cy Young. I've been using the same hot take for 3 years now.
One of these years.
I am the earliest of early adopters into Max Fried. I mean, I love him. I've been watching him since he was in high school. I loved him on the Padres. He's probably my favorite player in baseball right now. Max will tell you, you know, the one thing I'm known for on Twitter is my love of Max Fried.
Yeah,
I'll take any chance I can to stand him. Propaganda
coming from Jason.
But one of these years, he's gonna figure out that fastball because really the only thing holding him back is his fastball. He's gonna figure it out, and he's just gonna pop off.
In the playoffs, he was flashing 97, 98, yep. And his fastball was good. And I was like, oh my god, if this is the Max Fried we're getting. This is a Cy Young caliber Max Fried if he's throwing 97, 98 with like intent. High in the zone, I was like, "All right, I think that's a good hot take."
I think so too. Yeah, I think for me, I'm gonna go really hot out here. I think the Tampa Bay Rays actually won a World Series next year.
Wow! Woo!
Out of the dark with their top.
that's spicy with their one starting pitcher.
I think they find just a random way to get a couple guys who we've never heard of, and they just somehow turn into something. I don't know. I believe in that team. That's my hot take. My other hot take would have been the Padres, but after the weeks they've been having recently, that's not a hot take anymore.
Yeah, my hot take goes along lines with the Padres, but it's not exactly the way you were going. Probably, I don't think Yu Darvish has a great season next year. I think he struggles a little bit in his first year in San Diego, and he
he's not the same pitcher that they were expecting when they traded for him. I think he's a mid to upper three ERA guy, which isn't horrible, but it's not what he was with the Cubs this year in the last year and a half.
I like that. Yeah, I can see that.
But like a high three guy, not really great. Not
just an average starting pitcher. When realistic, you traded for him to go be him and Blake Snell were just going to be the two guys and just be dudes and just have that 1A, 1B kind of mentality out there.
I think there's a good number of guys on that Padres squad who are going to underperform expectations next season.
Mm-hmm. I think Blake Snell is the biggest name for me. People were like, oh, he just needs somewhere where he can go into the sixth and seventh inning. Yeah, except his career numbers, like third time through the order, are bad. Yeah. Like, he's never really been able to work deep into games. It's not like just the Rays wouldn't let him do it because they're the Rays. No, the Rays didn't let him do it because they knew him.
I still think don't pull him out of that game, but yeah. I do agree. I don't think you're leaving him much longer.
A little bit longer.
Like an inning long, maybe.
The decision to pull him, I don't really have a problem with. It was the decision to put in Nick Anderson that I had a problem with.
Yep.
Nick Anderson I had heard rumors from people I know that he was dealing with a little something, something. And like, he clearly just looked different. Like he just wasn't getting the swing and misses and anything. And I know people are going to say, well, it was like only seven games. Yeah. Except seven games for a reliever in the playoffs is a lot.
He caught a bad case of the Mike Foltynewicz at the end of the season.
Yes. Unfortunately. But like, The if you wanted to pull Snell, fine. If you wanted to keep him in, fine. But Diego Castillo is the guy to go to if you were going to pull.
Yeah.
Him. Or Fairbanks. Like this.
Yeah, Fairbanks going, was good in the playoffs.
He was good in general.
He was good.
Yeah.
They have a lot of players there still.
In general in the playoffs.
The Rays. I kind of like the Rays going to winning the World Series take just because it would be hysterical.
Like it's completely hot. Like if I'm being honest, I think the Braves might win it. I think that's honest, my realistic take. But at the end of the day, like I think the Rays, that's just like a hot take that nobody's really going to think about. They could do it again.
They produce pitching.
Yeah.
They also like, first of all, we talk about the trade for Snell. They got Luis Patino.
Who's not bad.
Good. Yeah. He's good. Like he can pitch and the Rays will use him in a way that doesn't burn him out because that's what the Rays do. And it's like, they still have Ryan Yarbrough, who's solid. Right, he's a solid pitcher. Oh, Yanni Chirinos is coming back, right? Also, they had so many injuries to their pitching staff, right? And look at what they got out of the guys that they had to turn to, right?
You still got Glasnow.
They still got Glasnow. McKay is coming back, and remember, Wander Franco is coming at some point, and he's going to be good. So, I don't think that takes hot, but I don't think it's as hot as people think it is. There is a route for the Rays to win the World Series.
I think it's only hot if you look at the Rays roster as it is today and go forward with the expectation that that's what their opening day roster is going to look like, which is not true at all.
No, the Rays, they make thousands of tiny moves that don't get noticed.
I think of them a lot like the Oakland Athletics in like the 2000s, like the Moneyball era Oakland Athletics, where it's just a bunch of guys you wouldn't expect to be good, they all just put together, they're just a really good team.
Yes. The Rays, it's funny because the Rays are great, and I love the way their franchise, like I love the way their front office works, because I think they're very, very smart, and their willingness to try anything is why they're so good. But I know that they only do that because their owner just refuses to spend money, which makes me frustrated.
I think also say that Austin Meadows is way better than what he was in 2020.
Oh, 100%.
I don't know what happened to him this season, but
he is, in my opinion, the biggest bounce back candidate of 2021. I mean, Austin Meadows is going to be a monster in 2021, and people are going to be like, oh yeah, he's pretty good. And then people are going to go, oh yeah, Chris Archer. More Pirates fans.
The Pirates team. They've kind of killed themselves. They're like the Marlins wool, but way worse, I feel like.
Yeah, I got a feeling this Josh Bell trade's gonna come back and bite him in the butt too.
It has to.
It's going day.
Just because
it's Pittsburgh. It doesn't matter who you got.
Brian Hayes will be gone in like a year or two.
Baseball, he's gonna be a bust.
Josh Bell MVP next year, and then whoever they got just quits to become.
Again, Brian Hayes is going to be gone in 2 years, and he'll like a 9-win player twice, win an MVP or something for, I don't know, it'll probably be like somewhere in like, I don't know, maybe like he'll the Dodgers will trade for him, right? And like he'll
just, I was gonna say the Red Sox.
Yeah, he'll go, or the Red Sox will trade for him and like everything, and it's just the Pirates are just gonna live in infinite misery. My godfather, he's a Pirates fan, and I'm just, every time the Pirates make a move, I just send him a text that says I'm sorry. He's just like, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Like, city of Pittsburgh deserves better.
They really do. They deserve better than Bob Nutting. Like, that's the
yes.
Every team's problem, it just comes back to the owner. Like, no offense to the owners. If you're listening to this, owners, and you want to give me a job, it's no offense, but it's them. Like, it all comes back to them. Like, I think Pete fans have to realize that they're talking about, well, why doesn't their GM just give them this contract? The GM probably wants to. Like, the GM is probably like, yeah, but if owners know, then the answer is no.
No. Yeah.
Well, like you were saying, like we saw with the Cubs when they won the World Series that year. Ricketts was given Epstein whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
Theo had complete control. Hey, you go out, whatever you want to buy, whatever money you want to spend, call me and I'll just okay it right away. This is on you. And it worked out well because the owner was completely gotten your GM. When your owner's not, it makes it really hard to do anything. Because for all you know, you could be trying to make a trade and all of a sudden the owner needs to take 4 days to think about it and that guy's gone.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it all just comes down to the owner. So yeah, Pittsburgh deserves better than Bob Nutting. That's the answer. And the Cubs fans deserve better than the Ricketts right now.
Yeah.
They're starting to fall.
They got what they wanted. Hey, you got what you wanted.
I'll wait another 100 years. It's all good.
They got nothing. They said, we're going to blow everything up. We're just gonna blow it all to shreds. We don't even care. We were okay, but now we're gonna be awful. And the Cubs are like, hey, we have a World Series. And we're still
That one ring was worth it.
They're still drunk in Chicago over that win. And they might get another ring here soon too with the White Sox. Then you know all the people who are Cubs fans are gonna be White Sox fans for a little bit there.
No.
A lot of people will be.
All the Fairweather fans.
Yes. Because they're going to want to party still.
I'll still go party. Hey, I'll go party. There's a difference between going to party and being a White Sox.
There's a reason John Lester left his parting gift as a bar tab from the city of Chicago.
That was awesome.
It's because Chicago fans like drinking, and they don't know. They're like, hey, Chicago.
Yeah, we'll celebrate. We're not White Sox. We're celebrating the fact that we get a drink for no reason. For a reason. Instead of just drinking for no reason.
Man, I think on that note, we can end this guy. But I mean, this has been a pretty good one. I think it's been pretty interesting talking to you guys. I mean, thanks to both of you for coming on today, because I mean, it's been pretty interesting.
Yeah, obviously, thank you guys for coming on. It was fun talking to you guys. And do you guys want to say your Twitter name again or anything like that and get back out?
Parting words,
little parting words, whatever you guys want to say. This is your time.
Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, it was great being on. I appreciate the invite, guys. I appreciate Max for nominating me as a relatively knowledgeable fan of an NL East team. It was awesome talking to you guys. You can find me on Twitter at ChopCityJason. You can find my site on Twitter at SixManRotation, SixManRotation.com. Let me give a shout out to my dude, Connor Kirkon. Maybe the smartest baseball guy I know. You should check out everything he's written. He's done a lot of great stuff analyzing quality of contact. He has a great article about what he calls dynamic hard hit rate. I'm sure Max will back me up on that being a must read for anyone who's a baseball fan.
Yeah, I want to agree with Jason. Thanks for having me on. My Twitter handle is at GreenfieldMax18. I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Aaron Nola, Justin Choi's article, his Twitter is at Justin O Choi, C-H-O-I, Choi for that. He's really smart. I agree. Jason's right. Connor's, if you're not following him, he's really, really smart. One of the smartest guys on baseball Twitter. He has several metrics that are just, the way he thinks about the game is great. And what his metrics are able to do are very, very helpful, especially when you're writing about player analysis for a website. You tend to go to his links a lot. Hopefully everybody listening enjoys baseball. I think the best part about baseball podcasts is you just get to listen to people who seem to enjoy baseball. And I hope people listening thought that, you know what, maybe I didn't agree with everything they said, but there are four guys who just really seem to enjoy the game.
And hopefully we actually get a baseball season this year. Fingers crossed.
Evan Drellick's article says that spring training should start on time. So here's hoping.
I mean, that's a good sign.
That's a good sign.
I don't see why not. I mean, the NFL and the NBA is going on. Bring on some baseball.
Absolutely.
Yep. Anyways, thank you guys. Have a good day.
Thank you.